Thanks for being with us here on Raider Nation Radio, the morning tailgate. Vinny Bonsignor, Vince Sapienza. I'm Clay Baker here with you, and a lot to get into in this second hour. We'll talk to Steve Weiss, NFL Network. He'll join us at 8:30. And don't forget, I'm at Chickies and Pete's Thursday Night Football tomorrow for Patriots-Jets at the Sahara, where it's always free parking. You know, I love what Marcus Johnson was talking about, especially when he kind of broke down the tape on Brock Bowers. He talked about, you know, he still has, for a tight end, a lot of wiggle in his hips to get open, but the way he was getting open against guys like Marlon Humphrey, who was, he had his hands full. Humphrey had his hands full against Devontae all game long, but to think what Brock Bowers can do against an elite corner like that, that just bodes well for how, you know, what this guy's career trajectory could be. But just this year alone in his rookie year, we're seeing some great dividends early on.
Listed as a tight end, runs like a receiver, a number one right wide receiver. His route running is, Vinny, it's there. Like, I know there's going to be little add-ons, and he'll be the first one to say, I got plenty to work on, things like this. But, man, to Clay's point, I mean, he wasn't just doing this against linebackers that, you know, were tough in coverage. I mean, he was doing this against corners, top safety, a very good defense at just about every level. And he was doing really well. And the conversation I kind of want to get into is, We kind of touched on it a little bit, and I think we saw a microcosm of what the offense wants to be. So when you look at 12 targets for Devontae Adams, 9 targets for Brock Bowers, and Zamir White had 9 carries.
Yeah.
We know Antonio Pierce, he said it. Mm-hmm. He wants 20 carries.
Right.
That means
more plays.
That's ideal. So that right there, those three, that's 41 plays. Call it 40. Just even numbers. That's 40 plays. Mm-hmm. The Raiders ran 60 plays week one, 63 week two. We all accept, I won't put words in your mouth, but I think we expect that number to rise, assuming things are clicking better on offense than they have in the first 2 weeks. Is that fair?
Yeah, for sure.
So when you look at that, that's 2/3 of the snaps right now. And you were talking about, well, what about Trey Tucker and Michael Mayer? All valid points. Michael Mayer played 39 snaps of those 63, ran 22 routes. And now, obviously, he's in a lot on those blocking, on those run plays. So he's seeing a high percentage of snaps. But, man, 22 routes and only one target. Yeah. You feel like that's going to go up, right?
I would think so. Because I've seen times where he is open, and a lot of this goes back to, we were talking in the break about how I felt like Gardner came into this season with a clock that was a little bit off, and I'm not blaming him for that. I talk about this a lot, what we saw in training camp, how there were days and practices where, and periods during practice where he had no time to do anything.
Yeah.
Like the ball would snap and Max Crosby would be in his lap.
Yeah. And
that gives you, that's not.
Real quick, that is not Vinny exaggerating.
No.
That is not. Right. It happened so often.
Yeah.
And so much that the offense would literally come to the podium and the question would be asked, how'd practice go? And a lot of it was, I don't know, like just because
right.
We couldn't do what we needed to do to really see where we're at. That's to your point of
it's the truth.
The clock was off.
And to me, yeah, exactly. And I think that caused his clock. It caused his clock to be on. It was a little bit. It was heightened, basically.
Uh-oh.
And so
bang bang,
right. For shizzle.
I got him. I got him. Hear everybody laughing? We got him. Clay, we did it. We got him to laugh. Let's go.
Yeah. So, and so call it happy feet, call it playing rushed. But as Marcus pointed out, and we all saw, there were wide open wide receivers, you know, against the chart. And to his defense, too. And he gets sacked 5 times, as he did. And how many of those were in the first half against the Baltimore Ravens?
3.
He's playing with a urgency, you know, and I even tweeted, like, if he just gets a little bit of time to throw, good things are going to start happening, and that did start happening in the second half. So not to put too much blame on the offensive line, but we're going to put some blame on the offensive line, whether it's run blocking or pass, you know, protection. And as Marcus pointed out, they already didn't have a good game in either of those categories, and we saw what was happening, whether it was Colt Miller just getting beat, or maybe some miscommunication with Andrews Pete, whatever the case was, the offensive line wasn't getting it done. And now you're having, you know, Gardner Minshew have to give up on plays earlier because, you know, he's got to move around or the time's not there. Boy, if he could ever just get some time, we're seeing guys wide open down the field. And if he does have the time to throw, I'm fully confident that he's going to make those throws. And when he has, look at the passing. What did we talk about with the completion percentage?
Needed to be high to have a chance.
He's leading the NFL right now.
I don't think we saw that coming.
No, but he definitely needed to improve from 62%. We talked about the Case Keenum magic. That it was 67% for him that year with the Minnesota Vikings in 2017. If Gardner just drops to that level to 67%.
Well, that's what I mean. People are asking, well, how sustainable is that? And I'll be honest with you.
If he has time.
From what I've seen, it's 2 weeks. It's a small sample. I understand that. But the picture that we have right now, I don't see now leading the league. But a very high completion percentage based on what they're running right now and the lack of time he's had, it's pretty impressive what he's been able to do. Again, there's been a lot of dinks and dunks in there, and I understand that. But Luke Getsy's offense, a lot of it's timing.
Offense is timing.
That is the definition of the West Coast. And the fact that Gardner hasn't had it and is complete and he's still being able to make decisions. Now, the fumble against the Chargers, an egregious error. The decision on the interception was an egregious error and a bad throw. It was ill-timed, bad throw, all of it. That being said, if we're looking at this, you're looking at a quarterback that has led his team, and the defense has led the team, but a quarterback that has led the offense, they're 1-1. And in terms of a basis, you heard it last hour, Gardner talking about, we see now what we can be. And they probably saw more in that last quarter and a half than they probably saw all of training camp and definitely all during the regular season in terms of things clicking and moving and going the way they wanted in spite of a running game, in spite of an offensive line that hasn't been good. Because the offensive line has been bad in the run game. We know this. We've talked about it. Antonio Pierce has admitted it as well. The pass protection hasn't been great. It hasn't been insanely bad either, but because the run blocking has been so bad, you just lump it all together, and it's a rough product right now. So when I look at, and I'm looking at snap counts, and I'm looking what you can get the sense of what the Raiders want to do. Brock Bowers, 43 snaps, 28 routes run, 9 targets. Michael Mayer, 39 snaps, 22 routes run, 1 target. We think the Michael Mayer targets are going to go up just by proxy of more plays being had, more play action with the running game happening, because he is too big of a weapon to have one target a game.
And you know, I know that they want to run the ball, and you know, rightfully so. But I forget what game it was last year, but a little bit of a breakout game for him. They went to him like 2 or 3 straight plays to start the game. Remember, he was making things happen. I think it's worth it for the Raiders to maybe do that.
Hit him early, hit him often.
Because and I say this because, number one, I think good things will happen. But number two, it's going to plant that seed now in the defense's mind. So now they may have to make a little bit of an adjustment, because guaranteed the Colts are going to be coming into this game, or not the Colts, but the Panthers are going to be coming into this game fully aware of number 89 and obviously number 17. So you would think that you can take use that to your advantage if you're the Raiders offense.
It's a jet
by now
game.
Sneaking a little bit, getting Michael Mayer and Trey Tucker involved a little bit. Let him go knock some heads, beat some dudes down with the ball in his hands, and plant that seed for the defense to have to make an adjustment to.
38 snaps for Trey Tucker, 29 routes run, only 2 targets.
Right.
And Marcus Johnson said there was a lot of times where Trey was open and he was being moved as that chess piece to help dictate what the defense was doing for Gardner. Mm-hmm. So when we look at Trey's impact, you can see the respect he has just in the way they kind of play him, the way the safety kind of backs up when he motions over. I mean, you see it, right?
Right.
I mean, maybe it's not obvious, you know, as you're watching a game right away, but when you go back and you look at it and you see what they're doing with Trey to try and dictate, why do you think a lot of those underneaths were open? Trey's running those deep, those posts, those digs, those whatever you want to call them, deep. a lot of things are there for the taking underneath. That's where Brock and Mayer
and what would help him is what Marcus talked about. Now, if you're able to run the ball,
oh my goodness,
you don't have, you know, there will be times where those safeties aren't way back there taking that away from you, but still having to be aware of it, which does help Brock Bowers and Devontae Adams to Jacoby Myers. But if you're running the ball and forcing those safeties to take a peek or to now have to come downhill to help in run support, if you're doing that at a higher level, then it's almost bound to happen that Trey Tucker is going to be able to take the top off a little bit or find a little bit more room. And so that's where that goes hand in hand. So, again, it's a long season, and there's going to be different ways that the Raiders go about, you know, being successful offensively. But I do feel that when you watch the tape, you see that there's opportunities out there for all of these guys. And it does start with, you know, protecting the quarterback and allowing him to stand in the pocket and make throws downfield and let plays develop. But it also has to also start with being able to run the ball successfully to change how defenses are defending them.
And, you know, it's a fascinating question you asked, and it's a great question you asked Gardner on Sunday regarding Devontae Adams.
Yeah.
Because we talk about all these weapons.
That's the other part.
And we talk about, you know, who's open. You know, that's always, well, who was open? Well,
right.
Devontae's never really, truly wide open. I mean,
if you're talking about bodies being devoted to him.
That's what I mean. And so that's a fascinating, you talk about decision making. That's a decision within the decision.
And it
of
goes
the play
against
call. And what I'm talking
proper
about
decision making
is Vinny asked the question, you know, Devontae has been on record many times where he said, look, just because it doesn't look like I'm open doesn't mean I'm not open. I'm open.
Yeah, even if he's blanketed by, you know, high-low defenders, he still finds a way.
A 50-50 ball is not a 50-50 ball to Devontae Adams.
He was technically double-teamed on that pass on the sidelines by the player and the sideline.
Right.
And he still found a way to make the catch.
There was two plays that were run. I don't know if it was the exact same play, but it was the exact same route that happened back-to-back weeks with Devontae Adams. It might have been like a 10-yard comeback in type deal, but he was coming back and Gardner was running to the right on both times. He was blanketed. He was blanketed. Gardner somehow just fires it. And it had the look of like a hope, just throw it as hard as I can in his direction. Devontae comes down with it.
Right. And it goes against what you're taught as a quarterback.
Yeah.
So it's counterintuitive. But and that's why I was saying to Gardner, it's kind of a mind trick a little bit. It's a mental hurdle that I'm really not supposed to throw the ball in this situation, but it's Devontae Adams, and so it is a prudent throw.
Because you have the offensive coordinator saying, all right, this is what the defense is dictating, meaning Devontae is probably not open on this one, but hey, over the middle, here is. And then you have Devontae in the other ear saying, no, I'm open.
Right.
Like, that's a tough, that's being pulled in two different directions.
Right. But you just have to do it. And Derek Carr talked about it, too, when he was here about how it does go against kind of what you're taught and how you're trained and what your mindset is. You know, throw away from the coverage. Find the open, the better, the higher rate throw, the higher percentage throw against somebody that's not as defended as well. But it's Devontae Adams, and he makes even really good coverage look bad because he's just that good.
Well, and actually, if you can get another wide receiver on the field, we saw last week for personnel usage on the offense, 13 personnel was used 5% of the time, 12 personnel was used 25%, and 11 personnel was used 70%.
Well, they're having success doing that.
And
they're a better team out of 11 personnel right now.
We could see maybe that's a trend that you start seeing even in this week,
yeah,
against the Panthers.
Because whether it's – I don't know why. I had to really look at the tape on what's going on with the out of 11 as opposed to out of 12. But right now, their best formation, the best success that they're having – is out of 11 personnel, which means you're going to have to take either Brock Bowers or Mike O'Meara off the field in that situation.
Yeah, and they clearly don't want to do that, but you have to do what you have to do to win
exactly.
the game. And I do believe that 12 personnel percentage will rise once the running game finds its way. It's it's going to be a natural progression where we're going to see a two tight end set go in like that. But we were talking about Brock Bowers. Everyone's talking to Brock Bowers. You know who else was? Head coach Antonio Pierce.
Yeah, I think he's just growing. I mean, he really showed up in some critical moments for us. But what I love, man, is the toughness, the physicality that he runs with, his play style, you know, down there, you know, caught that ball in the third quarter and, you know, dragging the defender for a couple more yards to get us to the one-yard line. You just see that kind of, like, energized our whole team and got him going. I think it's really huge. And I talk about both of our tight ends, you know, Big Mike and him. When we got 12 personnel in there, those are tough matchups. And when we get not just Brock going, get Big Mike going, I think we'll be a really good offensive team.
Head coach Antonio Pierce talking about Brock Bowers dragging defenders to the one-yard line. Again, that's why a lot of people are upset he was not part of Angry Ruins on GMFB. I love this. Antonio Pierce, anytime there's a Brock Bowers conversation or a personnel.
Big boy.
Big Mike. Big Mike. Got to get Big Mike.
Yeah. It tells you that they haven't forgotten about
and
him.
And it tells you how much he's valued.
Oh, yeah.
And how – but, again, as – we keep talking about Brock, and rightfully so. Rightfully so. This guy is a pass-catching freak. Davante Adams likened him to Rob Gronkowski yesterday, and Rob Gronkowski said, as a pass catcher, he's probably better than me. So just to put that into context, Michael Mayer on any other team, in most cases, is a tight end one.
Right.
Is a do-it-all, can run block, and can be a dangerous pass catcher. I mean, it is an embarrassment of riches in that tight end room for the Raiders right now. And the challenge for the Raiders, even though it is champagne problems, is, okay, now how do we get a nice yin and yang back and forth between the two of them? And again, a lot of it's predicated on the run game and being able to put out the personnel of a 12 personnel, two tight end set, the threat of the run so that it opens up both those guys to get their routes run and to create options for Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, and the more versatile you can be, the more multiple you can be, the better. But not just Michael, but Trey Tucker as well. We know what he's capable of doing. And that's why when I asked Marcus that question, I did it in a hopeful manner because you should be optimistic. It's not a massive problem. It's actually a good problem because you also know that when the ball gets into Michael Mayer's hands or Trey Tucker's hands, they're going to do something with it too. So it's just, how do you figure it out? How do you go about doing it? It might be a game-to-game type of a thing. I remember when I covered the Rams, I'm not a big fantasy football person, but I would go on this fantasy show before games, like, who should I – Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods. They had a couple of other wide receivers that would mix in there. And I was like, I don't know. It's a game-to-game thing. It might be Robert Woods with 10 catches for 167 yards.
Yeah, Mayer is still getting open. Yeah, Mayer's still getting open, according to Marcus. And at the same time, if there's a lead correction to how to deal with Bowers, perhaps he becomes the beneficiary. And that could come soon because there's also a lot of buzz around what Brock is doing, and people are starting to look at that on film.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, maybe this is the game where – all right, we see what you read it all and you saw all the highlights and stuff like that about Brock Bowers and Davante Adams, of course. We also got another guy over here.
Could be a sneaky game for Michael Mayer.
Could be.
Against Carolina.
Carolina might kind of zone it up.
In a game where a lot of guys are going to want to eat and a lot of attention is going to be paid to the big boys, Big Mike might be having a big meal.
Exactly. Hey, just want to remind everybody, Saturday night, before the home opener against the Carolina Panthers on Sunday, we will be at Crust and Rue over at 6825 South Las Vegas Boulevard. That's in Town Square. That's where we're holding the game before, or the night before, rallies. Specialty pizza, game day bites, amazing cocktails, and of course, you've got Dos Catas Tequila as a big part of it. So 5 o'clock till whenever, Crust and Rue over at Town Center. Over at the Town Center at 6825 South Las Vegas Boulevard. It's going to be a fun night. We're going to get Vince out there, right? And we're going to be laughing. There's going to be a lot of laughter at Crust and Rue. And people are asking, are you bringing Vince? Is Vince coming? Is the new guy, is Vince coming? I'm trying, man. The guy's got a crowded schedule. He's got to figure out how to fit it all in.
If it's free, it's for me.
It's free. Crust and Rue over at Town Square or Town Center, and that's at 6825 South Las Vegas Boulevard, 5 o'clock Saturday night.
It's the Morning Tailgate.
back here on Raider Nation Radio. It's the morning tailgate. Thanks for joining us. Vinny Bonsignor, Vin Sapienza, Clay Baker here with you. Keep listening. We have Bert Kreischer tickets we're going to give away in about 12 minutes. But Steve Wyche is here, chief national reporter for NFL Network, also co-host of the NFL Report and the Game Day Preview at Wyche 89. Steve, thank you so much for joining us. All right. We heard word had filtered down to us. You were at that game, Raiders, Ravens. Take us to what you were observing in the first half of that game, especially for the Raiders on offense.
You got good sources, because, yes, I was at that game. No, I mean, look, first half, they had nothing going. I mean, they weren't really in rhythm.
Yeah.
You know, they had to settle for field goals, which seems to be like the trend in the NFL right now. Mm. People can't score in the red zone, score touchdowns. The running game just wasn't that effective, but, you know, they were fortunate. Their defense was so dominant that they were right there. I think it was just 9-6 at halftime, so they were clearly in striking distance.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And then it did kind of come to life there in the second half, Steve. And thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it. And I was a source.
Supposed to exploit the sources, Vinny.
Now we know.
Right, exactly.
Oh, no.
It was great seeing Steve there in Baltimore. No doubt about it. So do you feel like what we saw in that fourth quarter is a better representation? I know the run game still is a major work in progress for the Raiders, but you know, Brock Bowers, Davante Adams, Gardner Minshew getting a little bit more time to throw and making things happen. Do you think that fourth quarter was a better representation of what the Raiders can be? And we already know that their defense, I think, is one of the best in the NFL.
Well, I agree on both counts. And here's what I'll say, and this is Luke Getsy. It almost seemed like the first half, you know, was the first few rounds of a boxing match where both teams were kind of feeling each other out. And Luke Getsy started scheming some things up to get Davante and Bowers in single coverage, because the Ravens going into the game, I had people there telling me they were not going to let Davante Adams beat him. Well, what happened towards that fourth quarter? He was singled up. He was getting doubled and getting zoned up in brackets the whole first half and for part of the third. The next thing you know, it's him and Marlon Humphrey. And they started exploiting it. Gardner Minshew was throwing beautiful passes to him. So credit all the way around. But I think part of that was some of the scheme things that Getsy was drawing up. And the fact that Bowers was making plays. He is a sensational player. I spoke to someone on the Raiders personnel staff after the game and was like, boy, 89. He's like, we got one there. And you can see it, because it's not just that he's shorthanded, he's a good route runner, but what he does after the catch, I mean, that is a dangerous thing in today's NFL, because it is all yards after the catch, because most of the passes now are more in the intermediate range. So now you're having some guys with him and Davante Adams who can get that yak. That is very, very huge when it comes to the type of offense the Raiders run, which isn't that explosive downfield stuff, but it's a move the chain type of offense.
Hey, Steve, you know, one of the biggest talking points this offseason regarding the Raiders was the lack of respect, right, nationally that they were getting. Antonio Pierce was using it as fuel for his team. And after that Week 2 win in Baltimore, a lot of the conversation was not necessarily the Raiders' victory, but more so the Ravens' collapse late in the fourth quarter. We were having a discussion this week about what this week looks like for the Raiders, you know, taking on an 0-2 Carolina team, playing their backup quarterback. If the Raiders go out and get a convincing win, similar to what the Chargers did in Week 2 against Carolina, does the conversation around the Raiders begin to change, or do you need to see something beyond a convincing win this Sunday?
It's not going to change much, just because, you know, Carolina is, I mean, they're just a bad football team, right? Everyone's expected to whip up on them, kind of right their wrongs, fix what's ailing. So it might not change much. I will say this, though. I mean, in terms of the national perspective, that's like the local perspective, too, man. People, when you've got two quarterbacks and you got to come down to the final week of preseason to figure out what's going on, that's going to cause a little uncertainty, right?
No
that's
doubt.
Cause a little speculation. So there's that. But what they're doing defensively, especially with 98 leading the way, Max Crosby, I think people are starting to take notice of that. And him and Christian Wilkins, when you watch that game against the Ravens, they got something going. So if they come out and they get four or five sacks and they put it on Carolina like they should, because Carolina's offensive line is really poor, I think people would be like, okay, the Raiders 2-1. Yeah, one of those wins is against Carolina, but they're 2-1. And so that part will have to be absorbed.
You know, thinking of the national perception for the Raiders, could it be that defensive identity? And what exactly are we watching as Max Crosby continues to progress and evolve into perhaps a defensive player of the year?
Well, what you're watching is just like a great player being great. And, you know, I know we love all the offensive pyrotechnics and this and that, but I'd say the two best players in the NFL at the moment are Max Crosby and Fred Warner, right? For the 49ers, the linebacker. I think when you watch what those two have done, it's insane. I mean, what Max, again, in this scheme and having Christian Wilkins, who occupies offensive coordinator's thoughts, playing on the same side, some of the games that they were running against the Ravens, but boxing in Lamar is a very difficult thing. And then resetting the line of scrimmage by pushing those guys back while you're doing it, that is just a physically dominant mindset type of thing. And Max was doing that over and over. And he's an unstoppable force right now. I mean, if teams don't give him the Aaron Donald treatment, which is double team him at the point of attack and have a third blocker, whether it be a running back or another offensive lineman, ready for when he breaks that dam, then they're doing themselves a disservice, because the way he's playing right now, I mean, he's in that TJ Watt stratosphere right now.
Yeah, he's racking up Defensive Player of the Year consideration already. And by the way, shout out to Patrick Graham, because, yes, it comes down to execution without question. But Patrick Graham came up with, I thought, a brilliant defensive game plan. And it's one of many that he's been putting together as time goes on. So I think that he's going to, hopefully for him, be a head coach here pretty soon. It'd be a terrible loss for the Raiders, but great for Patrick Graham. I think he deserves it. Steve, you mentioned Bryce Young. You mentioned what's going on with the Carolina Panthers. Bryce Young, obviously getting benched. A ton of support, interestingly enough, for Bryce Young. Even LeBron James came out, you know, with some words of encouragement for him. And I'm with LeBron on this one. I think that this is a case of the organization letting down Bryce Young more than the player letting down the organization. I know Bryce has some things to clean up and get better at, but I don't think he's had a chance yet to do any of that with this organization. Where do you lie in terms of who's more responsible for what hasn't happened yet for Bryce Young?
Okay, this is really layered, Vinny. Mm-hmm. But, okay, so first off, if you look at the film, Bryce Young is playing terrible football.
Yeah.
He is not. You talk to other teams, and they're just like, oh, my God, this is not the guy we saw at Alabama. His confidence is shot. His footwork mechanics, all that stuff are out the window. Okay, so that part's on Bryce. But isn't it funny how a few years ago, when Urban Meyer was coaching the Jacksonville Jaguars, we gave Trevor Lawrence a redshirt year.
Right.
People were like, oh, you can't even count his rookie year because it was such chaos and disaster. Well, why aren't we doing that with Bryce Young? Because it was just as chaotic and disastrous in Carolina. But so now they go out and they bring in Dave Canales, the quarterback whisperer, the guy who had Russell Wilson in Seattle playing some of his best football, the guy who got Geno Smith over 4,000 yards, the guy who resurrected Baker Mayfield's career in Tampa. And you give him the hook in two games?
Right.
But this is not – I don't think Dave Canales – did this. I think this is a very, I'm going to put in air quotes, involved owner being involved in this decision.
Yep.
But the final two points I want to make here. When you have young quarterbacks, what do most teams do? They go out and support them, right? Even look at Jackson or Tennessee. They get Will Levis. What do? They go out and they get Calvin Ridley, right? They go out and get players to help him along. They fortify the offensive line. They have not done that in Carolina. Now, here's probably the largest point that went into this, though. If you're a new head coach, you're trying to change the culture. And again, this is not maybe a Canales decision, not him, but you got 52 other players to coach. And if they see that this quarterback is not playing well and they're not buying in, are you as an organization, as a head coach, catering to one, or are you catering to 53? Mm. And I think they had to say, if we don't do something at this quarterback position, we are going to lose this entire team, right? This culture that we're trying to change is not going to flip, like how Antonio Pierce flipped it with the Raiders, right? It's not going to flip because we have guys not trusting us because we're forcing someone who's not playing well down their throat. So, again, it's very layered. as to what's going on. But when you put it all together, that is a soup of just utter dysfunction.
Steve, last one from me. We're only 2 weeks in, but it feels like it's already been 3 months worth of storylines and topics and things of that nature. I'm curious, just for you personally, what is really tickling your funny bone at this early part of the season?
When you say tickling the funny bone, what do you mean?
what gets you going? What gets you excited to talk, this early part of the year?
Well, look, how can we not look at the former Raiders quarterback, Derek Carr? Ooh, what's going on in New Orleans?
Yeah.
Who saw that coming? I mean, they're lighting it up. You're hearing people talk about Clint Kubiak like he's the greatest thing that ever happened. we'll see. If they keep it up, there's number one of our surprise teams. And the other thing we do have to look at is some of the 0-2 teams. Now, I'm not panicking, but this is a big week for the Ravens and the Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone's necessarily going to run away with that division, but they have got to start taking a step forward, and both have tough games. If they want to continue being the playoff teams that we think they are.
Steve Wyche, Chief National Reporter for the NFL Network, and also the great co-host with the NFL Report and Game Day Preview. Thank you again, Steve, for your time. Let's talk again soon.
Appreciate you guys.
Thanks brother. Steve.
At Wyche89 on X. That's hilarious because what nobody expected, those stories to be being told right now as two teams are looking at 0-2, and of course nobody expected Derek Carr to be exploding on the scene and running for touchdowns against the Cowboys.
That's what jumps out to me. Yeah. When you ask the chief national reporter, what's the thing that kind of jumps off the screen in 2 weeks? Derek Carr and the Saints. How about that? I mean, video game numbers, really.
Yeah.
And we were talking about Rashid Shaheed. How many times in terms of the Trey Tucker comparison, he is going off?
He's now
right
become
now.
Wide receiver one almost.
Yeah. We'll see, if they're able to keep that up. I don't know who they play this week. The Cowboys just seem
Efferdeen.
Cowboys.
Eagles. Ooh.
Yeah.
At home,
yeah. And the Eagles are a little bit
that's
erratic right now.
Interesting. That's an interesting matchup.
It is an interesting game. I'll definitely keep my eye on that. Hopefully that's maybe the early game. We'll be able to watch it before the Raiders take the field. So we will definitely be doing that. The Bryce Young thing, and he mentioned, Trevor Lawrence and the disarray that was going on in that first year. For me personally, because I experienced it, and we brought it up yesterday, was the Jared Goff situation that first year with the Rams. It looked horrible. Like I don't know that in some quarters he's ever outgrown that. Like, people still remember how bad it was in 2016 with the Rams, and it's been something that he's had to carry around with him the rest of his career. Like, he's, to me, criminally underrated, probably because of that image that we saw. And I don't know that Bryce Young's ever going to be able to necessarily recover from this entirely. Like, it'll always be part of his resume, and I know that the Rams let him down, let Jared Goff down, specifically Jeff Fisher, in some of the horrible decisions that he made or didn't make to what Steve was talking about, support your young quarterback.
And with personnel
and coaching too, and they've done that with Canales, the new head coach. But it does come down to personnel. That was the year in 2017, you bring in Andrew Whitworth and Robert Woods, and you draft Cooper Kupp. You bring in John Sullivan as the center. It was all geared toward getting the and again, he was the first pick overall, like Trevor Lawrence was in Jacksonville. And then to do what Urban did, to do what Jeff did, and now to do what the Carolina Panthers are doing, I just don't think Bryce Young has had an opportunity.
Yeah.
And when you talk about the confidence is shot, that tells me all right there. The confidence is shot. That affects everything else.
100%. 100%. And just so you know, good news, the Eagles-Saints game on Fox the morning, 10 a.m. in Las Vegas.
Beautiful.
Very, very nice. All right. Coming up next, more on this, and we'll also get your thoughts on the text line 702-365-9200. But first, let's clear the phone lines. So you can win the tickets to see Bert Kreischer over at Resorts World Theater, the Double Down Tour, two nights, September 27th and 28th. We have tickets. Get your tickets online at AXS.com. But you can also just be caller number 9 and hook it up for yourself, 702-365-9200. Don't forget to download the free LV Sports Network app. It streams clearly on both Android and iPhone. LV Sports Network app. Do it because it links you up to the podcast and more here for Raider Nation Radio.
It's the Morning Tailgate, wrapping up hour number 2, Raider Nation Radio, AM 920, Vince Sapienza, Vinny Bonsignor, Clay Baker Radio. Guys, last hour around this time, we were talking NIL money. The Arkansas ADs basically begging the households in the state of Arkansas to give them $100 each. And if they do that, 10,000 households would secure the NIL collective.
It's so easy.
For Arkansas.
Why didn't we think of this plan earlier?
You know what? There's another guy out there that's going with a different take. He's not talking to the donors or the collective. He's working with what he's got, Clay. He's working with what he's got. Now, the Marshall head coach is the man I'm speaking of, Charles Huff. So it has just come to my attention that I've just learning all this. Tudor Biscuits. Clay, you're familiar. Explain to the viewers or listeners that have no idea what a Tudor's Biscuit is.
Yeah, it's a regional restaurant that really has like the down-home cooking. And they got these massive, big, fluffy buttermilk biscuits that they serve pretty much with everything.
So Marshall apparently has an NIL collective already established with this establishment, Tudor Biscuits, which is, I'm guessing, a 24-7 type establishment. And, he's making the NIL that they have is that every player on the Marshall football team gets to eat there.
It's like a Waffle House.
Free at any time. 24, okay. They can eat every meal there if they want.
Right.
They don't have to pay for a
meal.
That's
healthy.
Well, you got to get those carbs somehow. So, again, Arkansas is asking people to give money. This is Marshall head coach Charles Huff trying to recruit some new players.
I'd love to have some of those guys from Ohio State, too. So if they want to transfer on down, we've got a Tudor's Biscuit NIL, all you can eat. So if any of those guys that run really, really fast at Ohio State like Tudor's Biscuits, I promise you, all you can eat all day if you transfer here. So, but yeah.
So, I don't know how fast they're going to be after a couple meals at Tudor Biscuits, but I've said this before. That went from a recruiting pitch to a, man, I could go for some Tudor Biscuits right now.
And it's actually, they're called Tudor's Biscuit World. So it's like, don't just be, you know, don't hold yourself into isolated parts of the country. No, we are an extravaganza.
Yeah, what do they say restaurants are? They're no longer just meals, they're experiences, right? It's Tudor Biscuit World is an experience.
Which means we're going to get dressed up to go to Tudor's.
It's like Casa Bonita in Denver. It's an experience.
No doubt. You know, and we talked about the Arkansas athletic director with the $100 proposition for every family. But those are all propositions. In Tennessee, they're literally doing something.
Yeah.
We're kind of burying the lead here just a little bit. And it's called a talent fee, by the way. It's a 10% talent fee on tickets for all sporting events at Tennessee. And that 10% fee, so if your ticket's $100, it's a 10
So
bucks.
For a Tennessee football game, 10% of your ticket goes to the NI Collective for Tennessee Athletics.
No, not 10% of your ticket. It's an extra. So you're paying actually $110 now.
So it's like a resort fee here in Las Vegas as someone.
Yeah, you're paying an extra. No longer paying $100. You're paying $110 for your ticket. Okay, and so that $10 per ticket or whatever, depending on how expensive your ticket is, that goes directly to their NIL fund. So basically they're shifting the cost from themselves or a sponsor to their actual hardcore fans that are buying tickets to
I don't like it.
I don't think anybody does. And I'm sure on some level, the Tennessee athletic department doesn't either, that they have to resort, you know, to this sort of tactic. But again, Rick Neuheisel, the great former coach and great commentator, was taking it a step further and explaining how he thinks that this is actually something that he feels Tennessee is doing to create all this anger, which obviously people are going to be angry about, to get this to the forefront where conversations are starting to happen, because I think what Rick thinks that the end game should be and that colleges are striving for is some collectively bargained agreement between the schools and the players on NIL so that there's a uniformed across the board, kind of like the NFL, if you want, you know, where salaries for players are, it's all collectively bargained. Every penny that you see go to a player represents part of the 49% that players get of the cut of revenue. So some sort of revenue sharing component where everything is uniformed and everybody basically has the same amount of money to be able to spend, rather than have to have a Tennessee trying to compete with an Alabama, and maybe Alabama's NIL is better or just more lucrative or more, you know, they just have more money to play with than a Tennessee. Then, and maybe a Kentucky has less than, you know, an Arkansas.
Right.
And so what he's thinking is that this is by design to get that.
For an end game. This is all being built for an end game. Yeah.
But there's a little trouble because collective bargaining agreements cannot include independent contractors. So you would have to go even further in a process to try to like form some sort of employment or some sort of structure that represents a union.
And
yeah, players association.
You'd be able to do that. There's smart people. Lawyers would get paid for something like that, by the way, that can come up with that. I mean, and that would, to me, and I think a lot of people agree, just make it a fairer process, and so that you're not always having to ask your donors and your sponsors and your hardcore fans to help foot the bill, you know, a 10% talent fee. What are we doing?
Yeah, I don't care about the donors. That's literally what they are. Donors, sponsor. No, I get what you're saying.
Because it's more. It's just like, what more now?
But it's
another phone call.
But this is where the pushback happens, and maybe this is the mad evil genius Tennessee is going with. You know, it's one thing to do it for donors. That's what they do. They are donating money.
Right.
Sponsors, that is their business, is paying for a product and getting that product to be seen. So I get all that. But when you start pushing on the fans,
for sure,
and you start squeezing the dollar of the fans, and then they start reacting however they react, whether they don't go, they don't show up, they don't pay, that's when changes happen. So to Neuheisel's point, maybe that is the evil genius. You start squeezing the dollars in the wallet of the hardcore fan. That's when you start to see, because you're not going to see a difference with these sponsors that are multi-billion, million, you know, have all this money. The donors have all this money. That's why they're able to do it. It's the fans. I mean, you talked about the median income per household in Arkansas, $55,000. The AD is asking for $100 from each household.
Yeah. Not every program can literally have kind of an owner. Like Phil Knight owns Oregon's program.
Yeah.
He owns that. He's literally the owner of a program, basically. And there are others across the country. Oklahoma State, I forget what boot, some kind of boot.
T Boone Pickens.
What a name.
Yeah.
Great A name.
So maybe this is, like you said, a step toward an end game.
A lot to discuss there. Maybe this is not the show to do it, but we will continue to weigh in on it. Coming up, hour number three, once a Raider, always a Raider. That segment in hour three.